Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay.
And me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hi, this is Kurt Woodsmith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, listen.
Other than these squeaky ass chairs.
Yeah.
It's not my fault. They were born in the 80s just like me.
Are you squeaky?
I'm a squeaky ass chair, bro.
Welcome to One Upsmanship. We are your co-hosts as usual.
Yes. If this didn't start with the line, "I'm a squeaky ass chair," then Mike has failed at his job.
Right. Then
I'm Adam Ganser.
We're doing this wrong.
I'm Michael Swain. That third voice you hear peeping up is our very special guest, Mr. Tom Ryman.
Hi. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks for coming, Tom.
Thanks for having me. Yeah. Sorry I'm late.
Nobody needed to know, Tom.
We weren't
even going to bring it up.
I wanted them to know.
God damn it.
I wanted them to know. I was walking back from 7-Eleven, coming up my stairs.
We release our recording schedules and timestamp all of our sessions. Yeah. So people are on top of that shit.
Yep.
Today we are covering, did we decide on BioShock Infinite or BioShock?
Infinite.
Yeah. Okay. And I think that's appropriate.
Yeah.
Which we'll get into in the speedrun, I assume, but I think it has the most cultural impact these days, right now.
It's certainly, in some ways, prescient. Yeah.
Oh, really? Oh, you mean plot-wise?
Uh-huh. Yeah, narratively, yeah.
I just meant System Shock didn't have the sales it had. And so, like,
sure.
I don't know. Even though a lot of people, I think, respect, especially gamers, the whole franchise, BioShock Infinite crossed over into like mainstream. Everyone played that.
I feel like BioShock was one of those games. Well, we should talk about this in the rant portion, which I'm happy to. Do you want me to speedrun this?
I think we just passed our first checkpoint.
I don't know what any of these are.
And entered the speedrun in our format. Speedrun is the quick synopsis of the game.
Oh.
That you have to do as quickly as possible, or otherwise a horrible punishment befalls you.
Mm.
And what do we have prepared for our punishment today, Adam?
Oh, it's just going to be fisticuffs. It's going to be great. Straight up fist beating. Oh,
actual bludgeoning.
Right. We just hit you in and about the head. Unless
in
you can
and
synopsize.
Around the face.
We're not even going to pretend that isn't the point of this podcast. Not even going to put our feelings aside about that.
So here to not get hit in the head with a racially motivated baseball is Tom explaining BioShock Infinite. Start the clock.
Okay, a racist Mormon essentially builds a floating city in the sky, and then this guy, the character you play as, is a Pinkerton who has to go rescue this woman who's been kidnapped and put there, but it turns out that there are many parallel worlds, and he's actually her father from a parallel world, so he's coming there to rescue her, and it turns out that he's actually the racist Mormon guy as well. And then in the end of the game, as all these revelations come around, your daughter from many worlds, her many worlds versions, come and drown you in the river where you were baptized and became the racist Mormon.
Yeah.
Period.
Pretty good.
That's
game
time.
Over.
nice mean summary.
And it was solely story based. I have a feeling we're gonna agree a lot. I like this.
Well, the story is what makes this game.
Well, but technically it's an FPS.
Yeah. It's first person shooter, came out
with
in
2013.
It scored a 94% on Metacritic.
mm-hmm.
which is very high.
Pretty good, yeah.
Yeah, pretty high.
Adam follows the reviews very closely.
I always follow them because I think that that informs to some degree where we're coming from to talk about this game.
It gives. I think it's a good... I do that too on other podcasts, which I don't have to plug.
Mm-hmm.
But... It's
plug
a good
way, my friend.
What are the names of those podcasts?
Well, right now it's just Best Bad Movie Ever.
Yeah.
On the Pops Ever.
Yeah.
It's quite good. David Bell and I. But I sometimes point to the Metacritic because it's a good idea to get sort of like what the contemporary feeling of the game was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Or the movie.
The advantage of this, the advantage that we have on this podcast, One Upsmanship, is that we get to come in whenever we want, like white hot lightning, and decide what the actual answer was, which is what we're going to do with this
game.
Well,
I would say that I feel that it's a reviewer or analyzer of art's
yeah.
prerogative to have a unique individual relationship with that piece of art, right?
Agreed.
I'm not going to like do what the review tell think the what
no,
the
for
review
sure.
tells me.
That's why we but that's why I bring it up because it you can frame
you're just telling me what Psychonauts is 84.
It is.
And
yeah.
I'm like
84
oh,
in Metacritic.
Well, that doesn't not make it 100 that's, in my heart.
Well, it still means that it was a well-regarded game when it was released.
Yeah,
that's all I look
yeah.
at Metacritic for.
Exactly.
So we yeah. know at the time what the general feeling about the
generally,
thing
if a,
was.
If a game is above like 87 on Metacritic, it's considered a massive success.
Mm-hmm.
Like in
a
terms
lot
of critical acclaim.
I think a lot of not developers, but like publishers incentivize their development teams with that. Like you get a bonus if it has an X
yes.
Metacritic score.
On Metacritic, wow. Yes.
And we could get into the video game journalism industry for hours. But
if we weren't too busy passing our next checkpoint, blink, blonk, we're saved. And that takes us into the rant portion of our show.
Yeah.
Where we're each basically, this is where you really get into opinion.
Okay.
Just each give a little spiel on.
Our progress is saved though, right? I don't
it
have
is.
To do that synopsis
yeah.
again.
No, if you no. fuck it up, the synopsis is still in place.
Sweet.
That's the benefit of the checkpoint system.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, player 1, 2, 3.
I'll do it.
We're going to go through and give our off-the-cuff opinion of the game.
Yeah. Okay, so I thought a lot about this game in prep for this podcast, and here's what I would say. It has a great prologue, a great epilogue. It's an average game between those two things. I do think the character of Booker is one of the better contributions to a first-person shooter's character because he's not a blank slate. There's so many first-person shooters like Halo, like, you know, Call of Duty, where
BioShock
the character...
BioShock 1.
Yeah. Where, yeah, the BioShock
that's
1.
That's woven into the narrative.
Right, BioShock where the character is nothing. Yeah. The character is intentionally anybody. This game made, I think, a cool, bold choice to make the person you play somebody. And that somebody was, in some ways, a cliche, regretful, fucking post-Simeon Soprano character, but I didn't hate him, and I thought he was interesting.
And he had a specific history, yeah.
Yes. I thought this game was worse than BioShock, which I think is an excellent game. I think that it did not deliver some of the things that make BioShock fun as much as BioShock did, or even BioShock 2 did, and by that I mean gunplay, cool fucking psychic powers. Those things were not as good in this game as they are in the previous iterations. But the fact that there is a sort of Americana cult was at that time a really interesting idea and now fucking haunting. And that I think you have to take into account. And, I had a blast playing it. I played it 4 different times. So I would say I have mixed reviews now, 5 years after it came out.
Yeah. I think we can't overestimate how amazing the tone and the world and the
yes.
story is because
yeah.
For me, the moment when my whole rant boils down to the moment when you walk around the corner and
mm-hmm.
a floating group of barbershop quartet singers is doing
the
God
Beatles.
Only Knows by
yeah.
the Beach Boys.
Oh, that's right. It's the Beach
Boys.
Yeah, yeah.
That amalgam, it's like its own unique version of steampunk combined with Ayn Randian philosophy,
mm-hmm.
which System Shock. His name was what? What was the main antagonist? It sounds like Ayn Rand.
Andrew Ryan
and BioShock.
So it's like
yeah.
you're not even trying to hide
and
it.
And then also Frank Fontaine is the Fountainhead.
Right.
Oh, okay. That
right.
makes sense.
Yeah.
yeah. And then the...
Atlas. Wait, sorry.
Andrew
Ryan. Smearing that milieu with like jingoistic Americana, I do think is such a great concept.
Mm-hmm.
And we now see, I think, Far Cry jumping on that bandwagon with mm-hmm. Far Cry 5. So it introduced a new world and tone. And Adam, you know how much world and tone are important to me. Everything is within the game. So there's a layered, complex story And we've been talking about this on several episodes, that you don't need to like research, go to Wikipedia, play an ARG. It is unto itself a complete experience. And then as a game, it's fine. I agree. Like the gameplay, the shooting mechanics are fun and fine. They end up rote for the majority of it. And then I would argue that once you get to the phase where you're riding the rails and fighting the handyman and have all the powers unlocked, there are occasionally feelings of like, man, I'm so badass, the variety of things I can do, but not often.
The rail riding is great.
A lot of the times you're just hiding behind a corner, shooting the dudes, moving to the next spot, but it's to get to the next story beat, and the story beats are all so good.
Most of them, yeah.
It's engaging the whole time. That's me. Player three, give us our final word.
Yeah, I feel that it's easy to forget how bold a decision this game was story-wise when it came out, because Michael points out, going around the corner, seeing the barbershop quartet. No. It's when you go into the town square when, Fink is singing Goodnight Irene.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you hear, as the whole prologue of the game, you're hearing about the lottery. You got to go to the lottery.
The drawing,
The drawing, yeah. It's going to be fun. And then when you get there and you realize what it is that they're stoning a biracial couple. Is that right?
I think that's right.
With baseballs. And then you realize, oh, this is... Because they put it's there. You just aren't thinking that way because games don't do that. Games don't talk about that.
It's so, Shirley Jackson's The Lottery, basically, yeah.
But racist.
Right.
Like, this is a racist society.
And, as a point.
Yeah. And you're one of the townspeople. You're not one of the people being stoned. Yeah,
yeah, you're one of the people. They give you the first baseball to throw.
Like, you'd think the first game to have a scene this provocative, you'd be the person tied up and you'd escape and teach all the racists a lesson. Because that's what feels good in a video game, yeah.
But it's so... I can count on one hand, and I don't even need all the fingers, the times that a game story has truly shocked me, and that reveal shocked me.
Really? You didn't know it was coming?
No.
Interesting.
Because I even...
the society would be so blatantly racist.
That racism was a thing that they were going to talk about in this game.
That's
because,
true.
Like, it does a couple of things really well and that relate to BioShock, the original. And I had followed all the things, all the coverage leading up to the game. They don't let on that that's in the game, at least not in my memory.
Not too much, yeah.
So when you start the game, you get launched up to Columbia.
Game on, by the way. We're in game on.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
This is the bulk of the podcast where it's just going for it.
But we're going to contend with each other, yeah.
But now I have a place to shimmy in the sound effect.
Oh, yeah. Okay, cool.
Hey, guys. I'm home.
Everyone knows that it's Dad's job to be a bit of a joker.
Sorry I'm late, everyone. There was an accident at the factory. Monty fell into the upholstery machine. Don't worry, though. He's fully recovered.
Good one, Dad.
Did you get the pizza for dinner?
So he likes to keep everyone happy with some dad jokes.
Yep, right here. I had a coupon, and it saved me a lot of dough.
Well, the truth is, Dad is just a fun guy.
Hey, I'm not a mushroom.
Please stop. Where does he get these stupid jokes from?
He listens to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast.
Oh, great. More dad jokes for me.
We've delivered over 15,000 jokes to over 3 million listeners, and man, the postage fees are killing us. Listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess, the 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again, the First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances, and the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. these stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
So you're walking through there and you're encountering all the townsfolk who are generally, they're pleasant. You're like, oh, this is weird. You don't register that they're all white because that's video games.
Right, that's right.
Everybody's white in video games. So pretty you much. Don't register the fact that all the only people you are talking to are white people.
It is 1912 America.
Yeah.
And you know that.
Yes.
So anyway,
but continuing. We were just talking about how Call of Duty World War II, you know you're playing a game that is telling the story of a time when the death camps are happening and Mengele is happening.
Right.
But you're pretty confident that they're not going to heavily rub your face in it. And they don't.
Right.
Because it's the safe way to play it with a video game.
That's
but
legit.
BioShock doesn't do that.
No, it doesn't.
Tom's making a super valid point here. I'm not trying to undermine it. I'm just right. contextualizing it.
And that ties into the original BioShock where they use the blank slate and the fact that you don't really have a choice in everything you do if you want to progress.
Right.
That they use that. They weave that into the narrative.
And it's awesome.
And that's the reveal. It's like, oh, shit. And it's the same here where you're just... You take so many things in this medium for granted that you don't notice when something sort of, I don't want to say sinister. I mean, it is sinister in the game, but like from a storytelling and an artistic point of view, it's not sinister. It's just, what's the head developer's name? It's Ken Levine.
Yeah, that's right.
And he did the original BioShock, but not BioShock 2, which you can feel when you play it.
You can tell when the brain that's behind these ideas is at work.
Right. Yeah. And that was one of those things where it was just like it was taking the medium and sort of using the medium against itself to tell you something.
Right.
And that's what this moment when that reveal was to me.
That is ultimately what makes this as a series, BioShock as a series, important, is that these are games that can only exist in video games.
Yeah.
It's a thing I've said to Mike many times, but that's what I feel is really important about BioShock in general.
And
that.
Yeah. To me, that is the most important part of the game. That's the
racial commentary?
I think that reveal in the beginning is the most important part of the game, or the most remarkable part of the game. There's a second...
That it's going to be about racism?
That reveal that it is, like because it hits you like a ton of bricks when you see it.
And to me, the most important part of the game is the violin sound it makes when you hack into someone's ocular cavity with your claw. That sound time.
It's really creepy.
Makes the game.
That's so when you spin that hook thing.
The
you
claw
have.
Is so like the melee attack in this game is one of the most visceral, upsetting attacks ever.
Yeah.
You just like bury a hook into someone's head and throw them aside. Usually,
do you think this game said anything important about racism? Other than it brought it up.
Yes, I think it pointed out that. The thing that we're dealing with right now is that the idea of good old-fashioned wholesome being able to call a murder of crows.
Right.
the Americana ideal, the idea of good old-fashioned wholesome family values, Americana, that idea of Americanism, of true, like, you know, that racism is so woven into that the two are inseparable. Mm-hmm. I think that it says that. It absolutely says that. And we're dealing with that right now in this country.
It's interesting that you say that because, like, I think you can make both arguments, right? I think this is one of those games that has the true, like, Derrida logic in it, both the case and the anti-case. Because, like, it's a place... This
makes
is
a, sense for a multiple dimension story.
Like, exactly. That's the trick here is that, like, because this is multiple crossed dimensions and this is sort of a fusion of so many different influences, it both makes the racism of the past present tense, which is, I think, what you're saying and what makes it so interesting, but also makes it distant enough that you can look at it as a thing that isn't real, you know? And that's the point. That's the opposite of what you're saying.
Right.
You know, where now it's hard to separate the Americanism from the racism.
But could you say that about any movie about racial issues? Because you could say, well, it's still a movie, so it knows it's not real.
No, because I think that most of those movies wouldn't dare to introduce fucking dimension hopping and like time travel ideas.
And, I don't know. So that's what getting at is the fact that it has fanciful things like a giant robot crow.
Right.
That makes it distanced from it. So do you think a fantasy, because we interviewed N.K. Jemisin for the Crack podcast, and she writes this great, highly regarded fantasy series right now that deals heavily with race issues in an absolutely like Lord of the Ringsian level of detachment from reality fantasy universe.
Right.
Do you think fantasy and sci-fi can't comment on race effects?
No, not, like not at all. Star Trek, and I'm saying,
where's the line?
I'm not making what I think the case here is.
Yeah.
I'm saying that that's what makes this game interesting in some ways, is that it both can be a case point and a text for what you're saying, Tom, and also can be a text for the opposite point, which is that when you bring up racism as a topic, you can sort of deal with it in a more gentle, distant way when you put it in the context of these impossible sci-fi mergers.
It still has to be a video game.
Yeah,
like, so it's, that's it has to pay a couple of different masters.
But it doesn't have to be this video game.
But I didn't find it soft or gentle. Like the reveal you're talking about, I did find it visceral and impactful.
But I think if you, did all these stories but took out the multidimensional part of it, it would have been a lot more controversial and painful to play.
Maybe.
For sure. For sure. I'm not saying that makes it bad. I'm just pointing out these influences.
I want to bring up a common complaint I've heard a lot online about that moment.
Yeah.
And see what you guys think, which is that for a game about dimension hopping, infinite possibilities, where the ending is ultimately like rewriting history.
I just understood the title. Go ahead.
Oh, me too. And doesn't it imply that... the underwater city is actually just a subdimension of...
Yeah, it says. I think it says that.
It explicitly says it.
Well, and there's DLCs that are sort of a noir story that takes place.
So could you be Andrew Ryan also? Is every... I want to see a
version...
Are
they all related?
I want to see a version where you find out you're the only person on Earth.
Right.
Everyone is you.
Well, then there would have to be an Elizabeth, too. Like, there's only a man and a woman.
Right. No. I don't think that's what it...
No.
I don't think Booker is also Andrew Ryan.
I am also Abraham Lincoln.
I'm Abraham Lincoln.
Yeah.
But...
No gods, only Lincoln.
A major complaint about a game that's so much about agency was that you can choose to throw the baseball at the biracial couple or throw it at the Barker to show that, hey, I'm not racist, fuck your society, or I need to blend in because I'm incognito. But either way, before you throw, your arm gets grabbed and it doesn't change what happens next.
That frustrates me.
And similarly, that frustrated a lot of gamers.
Yeah.
And then similarly, there's a point that seems very important where you choose whether you are represented by a cage symbol or a bird symbol.
Right.
And it doesn't affect anything or mean anything.
I think it gives you a slightly different... I think it does affect something.
Packages or something?
It does affect something.
But nothing substantial. I agree. See, that's what I...
I saw a lot of... people felt that Infinite was not interactive enough. And I know, Adam, that's a key point for you with games.
I think it sucks that that you don't actually get to make that decision to throw the baseball or not. That's when it's like, fuck me, man. Am I going to do this?
Mm-hmm.
So does that mean, do you believe if you have the balls to have that scene and the player does click stone the person, you should follow through and show the couple getting
fuck
stoned?
Fuck yeah, you should. Okay. Otherwise, you're bringing up a pageantry and I'm just like, yep,
and
that's how this place is. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, make me participate in it. That's what Bioshock's about. Bioshock is about, you're part of this. Like, you're doing it. That's what the first game is about.
The
Bioshock is about the illusion of choice.
Right. And this game took away the illusion in that moment, I would say.
But I will say that makes me appreciate it on a satirical or commentary level I never did that really is strong and striking to me, which is, you're saying, well, but you did it. Yeah, you literally did it because you also formed the society because you are the guy.
Right.
And that's a great commentary
about how
from the people on the ground to the system is the problem and you are the system.
Yeah.
There's a lot of great racial commentary there. Mm-hmm. Actually, I think 100%. It's deeper than I thought it was. Yeah.
And what do you think about the Vox Populi now, having played through the whole game? Like, how do you feel about the way that part was treated? Because that's also part of the racial commentary.
Yeah.
Right?
I think, I don't know. I forget the leader's name, but they...
I mixed up with the leader from the Fireflies. Like, they're the same group used functionally the same in both games. Last of Us.
Don't you end up killing her?
The Fireflies.
No.
No, you watch her get killed.
She gets killed, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, you watch her get killed behind a glass wall you can't interact with. There's a lot of parts of the game where you're like, really, there's just going to be a wall here and I'm going to watch something happen.
Somehow the Vox Populi in this game... See, I feel like I'm making the case arguing for cases I don't want to have to argue for. But I feel like the Vox Populi were not done as well as I wanted them to be.
Yeah.
And therefore, sort of painted anybody as an ideologue is also a hypocrite. Like, and that's really the message you take away.
I think that's what they were going for.
Like, it was. By rebelling, they are also
because just replace one maniac with another.
Right, because she's violent. Like, she's kind of ruthless.
But that would support. Maybe we don't want to believe that, but that could be true. I mean, meet the new boss, same as the old boss. It's about the illusion of choice, as you said, Tom.
Yeah.
Maybe their commentary is a bleak commentary that the system is self-perpetuating and is almost impossible to dismantle.
So then the problem becomes, and I feel like I derailed something Tom wanted to say way earlier, but I bet it was this.
Probably.
The problem becomes that if every single ruler or person or movement is headed by a maniac who ends up taking advantage of things and creating a dystopia, then I don't have to look at the dystopia I'm in and feel that upset about it, which is what
it takes. You can.
It takes away the
commentary of it.
The requirement of self-evaluation. That's why I'm saying self-reflection. It removes the onus of it.
But you're arguing that life owes you some incentive to build towards a utopia. And what if the unfortunate truth is, I'm not saying it is, but what if it is, that it doesn't? That we will never have a perfect society. There is no ingrained incentive to work toward that, and the game doesn't have to depict that because it's not how life is.
I don't think the game has to do anything, nor does life owe me that,
right.
But I do think that it's a proclivity in human beings to want to make their situation better.
Or believe it's possible it could get better.
Yeah, I think that's how we are.
But
and
there is a lot of interesting art around the idea that it can't be made better, and they could have valid points.
I just, I find that to be a point that has to be done in a way that is really exciting for me to think it matters. Because it's ultimately...
That Robot Crow was exciting to me.
Right, like
that's
I think
another thing,
Robot
just
Crow.
The sheer effectiveness
of some
of the moments.
I fucking didn't like the Robot Crow. I'm
really?
The only one. Yeah,
it scared
it.
The shit out of me. I found
totally.
It very effective.
But I liked the... I thought that the equivalent of the Big Brothers, or Big Daddies, excuse me, were more interesting.
Oh, it was a whole ecosystem, which is an intense gaming innovation that everyone loved, the Big Daddies and everything.
Right.
But I'm just saying... I'm doffing my cap at the effectiveness of the execution.
Yeah.
The crow was built up to be this big, scary monster, and I was very scared of it.
Yeah, he was a scary monster. And then when you get to use the crow, it's pretty sweet.
It feels really great.
Yeah, it was
great.
Really cool.
Use Songbird.
But you're right, as you're playing it, if you played the originals, I do remember being deeply disappointed when I realized the crow's just going to be a standard boss you face off with a few times.
Right.
There's not going to be an ecosystem of big daddies that I
Correct.
Manipulate. Oh, okay.
I just don't think this game is as good as the first game at making you participate in the morality that it's talking about. Like, Bioshock is gutsy because it takes on moral questions, racist questions, societal questions. And I think that's awesome. I love it.
Well,
this game was worse at making me participate in the element of choice, even if it's an illusion, than Bioshock 1 was. You know, and that sucks. It should be better than that, I think. You know, and I'm just making the case for the negative. I think this game's great, but
what was the satirical or commentary level of the first one, would you say? Because you're saying it does a better job of making you engage in the morality. And I agree in the sense that the ecosystem invites you to make basic choices like,
do I kill the sisters or not?
Protect the little girl or yeah.
Right.
Or do I make the game way harder for myself to avoid doing that?
And you can manipulate the big daddies in certain ways.
But that's a very basic moral choice, like that's purely philosophical, like hurt an innocent or don't. Is there a social critique in the first one? Because I haven't thought deeply enough about it. I mean, I know it touches on Ayn Randian philosophy, really a social critique?
Not in a way that lets you... I mean, you get to make a couple of decisions in the game, but there's never really one that sort of hinges on that. Like, you're never called upon to make a judgment about the society, really.
And it's not, I would say what you do with the little sisters is a form of judgment on the society.
Yeah.
But you find out that's true as the game goes along, because the game is fundamentally about like learning what happened to these people when they were able to enhance themselves beyond their human capacity and like the cost of that.
Mm-hmm.
And you have been participating in that process the whole time. Like that's what the game's about. And that's cool. you know, I think it's less poignant than Bioshock Infinite's it's critique cool, about American society.
To what end? Because it's like, it's a shame that they didn't combine those two ideas, because the one is more immersive, but is just saying, it's kind of like the classic trolley problem, right? If could you flip a switch to kill two people and 100%. Save one?
Yeah.
And so it's like an interesting, fun, philosophical game. The other one's like, let's talk about America's problem with race, but it's not as immersive. It's more at a distance. It's a shame that it was split
you're
up
watching
that way.
America's problem with race depicted in a way, and this is just my opinion, depicted in a way that makes you conscious of it, but don't feel like you're dealing with present tense problems. Now it seems impossible to escape it because of how life has gone in the last four years. But at the time, that's not how I remember the game feeling. But that might just be my ignorance.
Funny,
you know?
I also just think games are so devoid of any commentary or gripping narratives.
That's true.
Particularly AAA games like this.
It's
they
still
avoid
monumental
that, like, the
that they did it at all. Yeah,
very much so.
They don't want to do anything that's going to challenge people in that way because they want to. It's got to be a four quadrant.
Totally agree.
Gotta be, it's got to be sold to everybody.
And like, what if they added... There's an ecosystem component to Infinite that where it was like a set of biracial people and you had to like, that's almost too, I think it's interesting, but they probably with their AAA game are just, I'm sorry, that will be too edgy and alienate too many people.
I mean, how could, like, they went pretty far on,
they
like,
did.
In this game. Like
they
were
did.
Gutsy.
There's another level to this too that I don't see that gets discussed a lot.
Yeah.
But this game is a pretty severe indictment of Mormonism. I mean, I said that in my opening thing where it's a guy's a Mormon. It's never explicitly said, but
he's a cultist, you know.
What
it's
makes
Mormonism.
You, I thought you
it's
were joking,
close.
But now you're saying no, I'm saying
it
it's
is Mormonism.
Aimed at Mormonism. What's
he's
the
not, he's not a polygamist.
The church you go into at the beginning
is a tabernacle.
Does it have the gold bugler
and
on top?
It's the men and women are separated on different sides.
Yeah. That's old timey Presbyterian / fundamentalist Christian too.
It's contemporary Mormonism as well. But
right.
Like a
right,
lot
right.
Of,
that's true.
But I wonder if they were going off saying like, let's slyly reference Mormonism, or they did research and saw old pictures of Presbyterian services in 1912 and went off that when they were designing that.
Probably
moment.
A bit of column A and column B.
A little bit of column A, a little bit of column B.
Yeah.
There's more, but like I was playing it with my wife Marina, who is ex-LDS.
Oh, I didn't know that. That's
recovering Mormon.
Uh-huh. and as we're playing it, she's pointing. I it's been a minute. It's been a while since I played it.
Yeah.
I should have had her come in here. But as I'm playing through the game, she'd just be pointing at stuff like, yep, that's, this is all Mormonism.
Wow.
It's, I mean, even the appearance of
Comstock himself.
Comstock is is reflective.
And now
of
it's
that.
Coming back to me, like when you're drowning at the last second, your magic underwear try to save you.
Mm-hmm.
And,
right. Drown him in the baptismal font.
Well, I mean,
I guess it is polygamy. Is it polygamy if you're married to one person but in infinite dimensions?
I mean, that's a whole other set of problems.
Yeah.
I think the more I think about it, the more I'm like, oh yeah, because he's a prophet. He calls himself a prophet. He's got a new revelation that's like related to Christianity, but it's its own.
But it's
thing.
Like tangential.
And for if people haven't played, the main threat is it's the city on the hill parable,
right?
And they believe that he believes he's going to oversee like a second flood, but it's going to be because they're going to bomb the earth from above and their floating city.
And he literally flees.
Everything.
He literally flees with a community into a sort of promised land, the way that the Mormons
and makes active plans to scourge the rest of the earth of life.
Well, they literally do. Bomb China, right? Like they participate in some war that's referenced in it.
No, the figure was in a war that existed in the 1890s.
The
I want to say.
No, Columbia.
Right?
I almost
Booker
positive.
Was in the Civil War,
and then he was in the there was a
fictional
rebellion.
War. Reference?
No, there was a rebellion. Okay. The Boxer Rebellion.
The Boxer
Rebellion.
Right.
That's
that
a real
China,
thing.
Yeah.
That's what you're referring to. I think
we're gonna have to check, but I'm pretty sure that Columbia does bomb. Or participate in the Boxer Rebellion somehow.
That's totally possible. I thought it was just they were commemorating this guy's life story, and then he did this.
Well, we're digging
because
into
when
plot.
You're playing as Booker, he's playing it, and you can hear the shame in his voice at having done this, and that.
Yeah, and then one of the characters is like an old commander that he remembers.
Yeah, and that's where you start to make the connection point. Like,
While we're digging into plot, can either of you fully explain to me to my satisfaction, or is it just like shuffled off to multidimensional magic? exactly physically how the two scientists fit into the plot.
So,
like, what their agenda is, why they appear when they do, and why they do the things they do.
I mean, I want to say that the two scientists is just one scientist, but from different dimensions. Where one of them, where she wasn't a woman, where she was a man, and
she's a man.
She's
baby.
A man, baby.
She's a scientist, baby.
We're doing Austin Powers references on this podcast.
Welcome
2018.
To 2018.
Hot.
Somebody stop us.
Scorching. Scorching.
We're real warm.
That's a Maze Runner Scorch Trials reference. I got that.
He would love.
I want to say that most of the information about how they matter comes about in the last area when you get like more of her tapes, her fucking whatever they're called.
Or when you're going on the gondola and you see a series of them doing scenes from throughout their lives.
And I'm pretty sure that she was part of the... Like, she and Comstock knew each other, and she was what made the place able to fly, right? And able to...
And all the multidimensional happenings. Yes.
Right. I don't know how they met. That part's not clear to me. Do you know?
I can't remember.
The main thing I'm interrogating is I don't know why they want to help you or hinder you, or why when they interact with the plot, why they choose to do what they do
what
from
I
their
think.
Point of view.
This is what I think. So, again, all of the Christian mythology stuff that this is drawing on draws on the same sort of set of facts, right? Which is the puritanical leaving of the homeland into its own sort of... And I think because they were oppressed.
Leave the sinners behind, yeah.
Right, and also, like, this is a place where we're free to worship the way we want to, right? Like, that's in American history. I think that's the appeal for this woman, is that she's allowed to conduct these, like, semi-legal experiments in this commune.
Her religion is fringe
Correct.
Science.
And it you know, coalesces with Comstock's view of himself. And then I'm pretty sure that the traveling between dimensions was a way of... They say this and I forgot, but it was like sort of he needed to capture Elizabeth,
right? To
when
bring
she was
her
a child,
into that dimension.
Yeah, for some reason
he just wanted his daughter back, so he stole one from
because Booker was a mess or whatever.
Right, that version of himself was a hot mess. Yeah,
and he's trying to correct the past.
Right, because there's two different.
He needed a thimble. There's something with it's all about transporting this thimble via her pinky through the dimensional gate. No, that joke didn't scare
me. No, sorry.
Oh, right. Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
The tip of her pinky gets cut off.
She loses the tip of her finger by the portal. Yeah,
right.
It's a thimble. Would have been funnier if it was the top hat pinky.
That's fair.
Or the little metal dog.
Yeah. But that's all I can understand about why they would be involved. I don't know what, I mean, other than Comstock's a madman, we should stop him.
I think
she's Einstein.
The Lutesses are just like, okay, this is wrong. We have to repair.
This
we
went
have
too far.
We have to repair the damage that we've allowed to happen.
Right.
Yeah.
It's, you know, everybody who works with these fucking egomaniacs ends up repenting in Bioshock.
It's basically to stop Comstock because
right.
their ultimate goal is, you know, they bring all of the different Elizabeths together. Because when Booker and Comstock split is when he gets baptized in the river. Like,
yes.
Half of the infinites choose not to and become Booker, the alcoholic Pinkerton detective.
Right.
And then half of them choose
to accept faith into their heart.
And then they become
and
evil,
goes to their head.
Evil racist, floating madman, floating racism.
There's a message for you. Yeah. Don't get baptized. You'll go evil.
What was the line? Wasn't that like the first escort mission where you're like, I'm here to kill these people for loving America
That's
too
right.
much?
Yeah.
Here to kill all these goddamn Americans.
That was the first one we ever did.
Yeah. And it was a single shot.
Yeah.
No cuts, which no one appreciates or cared about, so we never did it again.
Yeah.
It was really hard, much harder than all the other ones.
It was really very difficult.
No teleprompter.
Well, because there was a lot of snacking, too. Like, Greg was eating a lot of food in that take.
But yeah, I think their goal was just to merge, not all the worlds, because they can't do that, but like merge all of the Comstocks and Bookers together.
Did they need to? So if it's Terminator rules and your goal is basically to kill this guy or stop him, well, they kill him. So to cause this guy to die in every universe where he eventually becomes evil to sort of purge all the timelines
right, close
of
the
evil
loop,
guy.
If you will.
Mm-hmm.
Could they not have teleported in, shot him in the back of the head, Looper style, and then go.
They would have to do it infinite times.
Does it have to poetically end with his daughters drowning him at his baptism?
It doesn't have to, but it's cool.
Right. It is cool, but
it's
saying,
real cool. Yeah. No, I think because you run into it's anything that deals with time travel
gets messy.
It's a paradox. You can't solve it. But I think they're coming from, like, if they just try to do the let's just go and shoot him thing, they would have to do that infinite times. So
then why does drowning him only have to
they're merging
once?
Them, I think, is what the point is.
What causes them to,
I don't
I'm
know.
Like a child wandering into the movie. I've played this game through twice. What causes them to merge, the universes to begin merging? Is it something that happens in the plot, or does it just start happening?
I don't think we know. It's... Cause I'm, I don't know.
I mean, it's definitely contrived in a way so that the gamer understands everything that's happened by the end.
Yeah.
And one presumes that, I mean, at no point in the timeline was this person drowned. They don't get drowned when they get baptized. You know what I mean? Like, mm-hmm. So the drowning might be the point where neither man emerges, right? Because he doesn't reject baptism and he doesn't accept baptism. He just drowns.
Or
so
maybe.
So that ends the loop, right? That's the idea.
Maybe. In the baptism you experience near the beginning of the game, you actually drowned, and the rest of the game is just
a fever dream.
Drowning drunk,
right.
Thinking
right.
of how he could
well,
get
yeah,
his daughter
they get,
back.
Yeah, if they get
the Breaking Bad
every Elizabeth, I think that that's what we're seeing. We're seeing every Elizabeth in every possible world coming to Booker at that point when he's going into the river, and they drown him before he becomes.
And
all of
the Booker is only represented as one, but we're supposed to understand that.
But we see many Elizabeths.
There are infinite Bookers who are all occupying the same point in space, being drowned at the same time. That makes sense.
Yeah.
My follow-up question is, and that all happens thanks to the fact that Elizabeth has the power to interact with dimensionality.
Right.
Why? What happened to her? Did she get struck by lightning? Is it just a mutant power?
She's brilliant,
born
right?
Born that way?
I think it's because a piece of her is in different worlds, right?
I don't
it's
remember.
Because
but
of the pinky
was,
thing?
I think she's a special child, though, I think. Is
special child.
That's why they went back and took
she's
her. I forgot
child.
This part of the plot. But can I say this? Like, I guess I want to pivot. Do you mind if
we
I pivot?
We should pivot to gameplay mechanics.
So do you think this game is helped or hurt by the sort of, I'll call it, slavish addiction to the big daddy, little sister dynamic?
I don't know what you mean by help or hurt in this context.
I don't think it exists in this game.
It does.
Right.
Elizabeth is a little sister and you're a big daddy.
Oh,
and
yeah.
And like, it's the same exact, like they keep repeating the beats everywhere.
But in story. But if we're pivoting to gameplay, I would say there's no component of the underlying gameplay of the big daddy, little sister ecosystem in Infinite.
Well, you're playing as a figure protecting the little sister who helps you.
Right, but as you said, you don't make any active moral choice over and over of whether
that
to kill
part,
and
that part,
vitality
no.
or not.
That part, no. But
it's a story echo of, yeah.
Yeah.
And the game is formed by that echo.
And you're not a big daddy, because big daddies don't have a specific past and agenda and things to do.
Right.
They're ciphers
but
who all
formally,
live to do one thing.
But formally, you are.
Right, but if people haven't played the game, I want them to know you don't play as a big daddy
Fair
in
enough.
Infinite.
Fair enough. I guess we don't have a strong opinion on that. To me,
feel like it doesn't exist in this game. Yeah,
I think it does. I think clearly,
it could be,
I feel
it
like
could
it exists
be.
As a wink, but it like doesn't matter that much.
Yeah,
I think it. I think this game is a little beholden to. It took a lot of things from BioShock that it didn't need to. Like that's just my opinion. Some of them are. I think that the use of the
plasmids,
the plasma, and they're all worse because they're all supposed to be old timey.
Yeah.
And that means they're all dumb.
No, in this game where things do try to be steampunk, which I would define as having fanciful things but depicted as if you're taking them seriously.
Right.
The idea that you drink a potion and gain a new ability
is silly.
Is shocking. And that the potions are like purchasable by the people in the society.
Right.
Why does everyone you meet not already have 20 powers?
They're weirdly wellness tonics, yeah. And also they don't do that great of a job of figuring out how they cross-pollinated that idea. I know they sort of wink at it, but they don't.
It's I think the idea is that they're poaching
from
science from other dimensions. Like,
yes.
Is it Fink's brother who's taken all the music?
I think so, right.
I think it's an example. I think that's what we're supposed to understand.
He hops, but why does every dimension? So every scientist in all the multiverse. Very different things. They're like, I figured out how to force push. I figured out how to summon a tentacle from beyond. I figured out how to make people turn into crows when they die. It's always a potion. Yeah, like boil that down,
to
make
a
it a potion.
How do we make this a drinkable tonic?
That seems like the one thing the scientist from 1912 contributed to.
Right.
Yeah, it's like, how can I make a drinkable, son? Yeah.
No, it's got to be drinkable. It's the only way it'll sell.
None of this syringe stuff. Nobody's going to do it.
Yeah.
Right, it can't be a ray.
Who won't cotton to it?
You got to pull that down the gullet, otherwise people aren't going to take it. Yeah, I don't know. I think that in this game, they aren't... BioShock makes a cool dynamic of like half magic, half guns. It's like, you know, that's cool. I just think that this game got worse by holding on to that idea in a way that was like, eh. And I also think that even though playing with Elizabeth was more fun than most other escort missions, and this is like one long escort mission, and fine.
The moments when she throws you shit
that's
are
cool.
Very satisfying, yeah.
That's cool. And also, she gives you powers of like finding stuff in other dimensions.
Right,
and
yeah, she also, I think it's, It undercuts that the escort mission trope by she doesn't need your goddamn help.
Right, she doesn't need it. Right.
And that is the one, like I said, towards the end game, I did think there were some battlefields where I was like, this is what I wanted the whole time. Like, I'm opening a tear that does that, but then I got to hop the rail. Yeah. Then I'm just doing some shooting, and then I got to change the tear and get a different weapon. The variety felt really fun, but not every room felt balanced.
So here's my big, dumb critique of this. I just think the gunplay, I don't think any single element that they did is done that well. And I know that sounds like, what?
It's not done better than games that do it better. It's done fine.
Well, but games have been doing it better for decades. Like, so I'm going to pick out like an old game. Remember Turok Dinosaur Hunter?
Yes. Loved it.
Remember that fucking game? So
the first game for me to introduce the concept of strafing with one hand and looking with the other.
Yeah.
The very first game. Yeah. So I feel like that was a crucial game because my brain started to split. I developed the ability that is now needed for every game.
An equally fanciful idea. Right? It's like there's aliens and shit in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things it does so well is give you an interesting variety of gunplay. Right? Like there's a lot of crazy guns in that game, right? And it's not more sci-fi than this game is. It's not even close. So why am I fucking stuck with 8 different carbine rifles? Or like, you know, 4 different weird bad submachine guns.
Right, you could have gotten a railgun.
And that shit matters.
And it would work with the story, no problem.
Like, it sounds dumb, but like the reason we venerate Half-Life 2 is because of the gravity gun.
And the reason the new Doom, I think, is satisfying is because you just spin the wheel. Every gun feels different and is fun.
And you know what? That's the game. Like, that's more important than the fucking dimensional rifts and the little sister shit. Like, give me good guns.
I guess that's why I thought of, because the plasmid powers are extremely varied. So I thought
of
that as my primary weapon. And then the gun is just a tool that kills the things once they're wrapped up or floating or whatever I do to them.
I use the Bronco one a lot. And
Bronco
Buster. And then I used... what's the name of the I think the electricity one.
Yep.
Yeah.
Because the rest of them were kind of eh. You know, like, what were the other ones that were even any good?
I really like the tentacle.
Fire one's amazing.
Grab and throw.
The combos were still the same. You shock somebody, hit him with the wrench.
Right, like, even Mass Effect, right, which is, again, psychic powers or tech powers plus guns.
But I would argue the shooting in Mass Effect feels even clunkier.
It's way clunkier, but they find more interesting ways to deploy the powers. Like, you can do power combos. You can do, like, just different, like, scenarios and approach shootouts differently.
And
you can't do that in BioShock, and that's all it is.
Do you feel BioShock 1 had that? Like, were there more power? Were the plasmids more engaging than they are in
Infinite? A new idea to me then. So it's hard to say.
But I don't feel like it devolved. It was just as unengaging as... Like, BioShock 1 gets more credit because it was ahead of its time, but it's not like the shooting is some of the best... It's not as good as GoldenEye. I would say in terms of
GoldenEye.
Like how visceral each shot feels.
That's fair.
True.
BioShock 1 is more of a horror game, is part of it,
mm-hmm.
than this game is. So, like, not having as cool a guns works better. Because you're scared.
I just realized this game is a good Black Mirror episode.
It really is.
The exact tone of it. Yeah.
It really is. You know, and also, like, BioShock 1 was, what, 7 years before this game? Something like that?
Yeah. 98.
So it should
be 98. 2008.
It should be better. I mean, I know this sounds like a picky thing, but, like, to me, a first-person shooter must first be a shooter. Like, it has to be great at that. That's like, even after all the shit I've said about Destiny 1, about how it's not great in so many ways, you know what it's real fucking good at? Guns.
The gunplay.
Real good at that. And this game's not that good at it. You know? Tell me I'm wrong. Do you disagree?
I don't think it's as mediocre as your tone implies. I think it's decent.
Out of 100, what do you give it?
70.
70? What do you give it?
So a C, I guess.
Yeah, I'd probably give it around, like, yeah, like a 65,
that's
70.
That's probably what I would give it too.
Like,
but that's not very good for a game that's a classic game.
It's not,
right,
it's
whereas
not,
Destiny's like a 92 or something.
Definitely.
It's much more impressive.
Right. It's, yeah, it, whereas Destiny is a game that's great, but I don't give a shit about anything that's happening.
Legit.
Agreed.
So, and that's like, a big problem.
The other is way more important. Like, I have to care about what I'm doing.
I don't know why it's so rare that we can't get both. I almost never see a game where I give a shit. Like, I love Last of Us, which we're going to talk about today as well, but we had a talk about it, and Adam convinced me that I'm like, you're right. It's not innovative. It's just good. Just being good doesn't make it innovative. God damn it.
That's right.
Why can't something have the perfect gameplay, great story? And like, it's very
rare. The thing that
Psychonauts is my favorite game ever because I give so much of a shit about it, but I'm not going to argue with you when you say there's better platformers out there in terms of the feel. I'm like, yeah, there are.
Yeah, the point for me is whether or not the gameplay whether or not the two get in each other's way.
Right. Which it doesn't in this
game. It doesn't in BioShock. Yeah. That never happens.
No.
And I think that is what makes a game great, is when both elements are done well enough and engaging enough and don't get in each other's way. And
That's such a strange concession I have to make to you to say, like, I think that's right. Because that suggests that still video games are two things. There's the fucking game loop, and then there's the story, which is a thing you and I debate all the time.
We've discovered a primal tension that is now coloring my whole understanding of the medium.
Right.
Which is that games are a medium that is two things. The interactive component and the story component. And they are so interestingly at odds that you'll rarely even see a developer who pays enough attention to both. The games that have the best interactivity and most innovation around gameplay seem to deprioritize story elements. And if the story blew you away, if you think about it hard, the game probably wasn't that fun or
innovative. That's the issue. You know,
it's crazy that, like,
that's why
we can't focus on both at once.
That's why I always venerated BioShock 1 more than this game, more than Infinite. Because to me, at least as a young gamer at 27 or whenever, when I played that game for the first time, that was like, whoa. Both things are great here. Both the game and the story are great. And that's why I'm being so hard on Infinite, because it didn't get any better, in my opinion.
Any opinions on System Shock, the original?
I didn't play System Shock.
No? Tom?
I haven't played it. I have it on Steam, though.
Great.
Give it a shot. It's excellent.
So I think we've covered the gameplay.
Yeah, we should move into our final phase.
That's fair.
Phase.
I just wanted... There was just one other thing I wanted to say about this game. So, like, do you think it's valid to bring up a context as emotion, like, or excuse me, I'm going to rephrase this. So do you think that because history has gone the way that it has with, like, our sort of American racism, that this game has become more or less good?
I think it was always relevant. What it was saying about what it was saying about Americanism, its connection to religion.
Sure.
And how that is woven in with racism.
Yeah.
I think that was always going to be relevant.
Interesting.
It was always relevant because, of course, racism didn't pop up just now that it's culturally,
right,
people are more aware. It's always been at that level, if not worse, as you go back in the past. So it was always relevant. But I do. So I just think we're living in a time where people of color are rightly drawing attention to the issues. And so the game takes on a new luster. But, like, you and I both all know from the Twitter sphere that, like, a lot of people of color have made the joke of, like, welcome to the party, white people, of, like, being worried about these issues. I've always been aware of all these issues.
I had
issues.
A friend who literally said that to me.
Right. Yeah. They're just back burner for you. Like, you know, racism hasn't been defeated and it's still out there, but you don't think about it on a daily basis.
Right.
So I just think we're living in a time where it's great. It's a second civil rights movement, like a moment where society has enough wherewithal to focus on it for a minute. But even when you're not focused on an issue, those systemic issues still exist. That's my point.
But we all, so that's fair. I guess I would just say, and I don't want to belabor this too much, we do credit works of art for being in proximity to
the historical moment.
Yeah.
That's true.
For instance, Ryan Coogler made that movie,
Fruitvale
Station, that came out right before the shooting of
Trayvon Martin.
Yes. And, like, was that movie relevant before that happened? Of course, it was great.
And because Fruitvale Station had already happened,
right? Exactly. Based on an actual thing that happened. But yeah. But also the proximity of it to a massive like national event. It made us appreciate how great this movie was in a way we might not.
It was both a well-made movie, and it came out exactly when everyone's like, I need a narrative explaining this madness to me. And they're like, this one
And does BioShock get that? Maybe it's too far away?
I think it's a little early.
Because to me, Far Cry 5, which is coming out still at the time of this recording, is attempting to capitalize on that.
They're catching the wave. They're just like capitalizing on, let's
Whereas
make
BioShock was
jingoism.
Legitimately ahead of it, and... thoughtful about it.
We'll see how much Far Cry addresses racism.
I think they might.
It's in Montana. I guess I don't know what that means. Yeah,
they might sidestep it and just have the people be like crazy, like psychos.
Right. Yeah.
You know? Well, so BioShock 1 is, if I remember it correctly, also had the overtones of this is a racist society. Like that's not new to the series.
It had. I would say classism more than racism because it leaned into the Ayn Randian thing, and all the text and like audio logs were about like, but they're of the lower class. They're fucking, they live in steerage. It was like that Titanic vibe.
Because like Infinite, the racism from Infinite is like, is like just post-Civil War racism, right? Like it's not just black people, it's Irish people.
Italian Americans are still considered of color, people of color.
I think Irish. Yeah, yeah, like there's a, so like it's focusing on that era of history, so maybe it was a little more subtle in BioShock 1, but I seem to remember there being like working class people who were clearly not white.
I don't think any of the characters in the first game are black. I think the
are you
only,
sure we don't get like
I'm
audio
not,
logs
I'm
about
not
that?
Pause. I'm trying to think of all the audio logs. The only non-white character I can remember is the doctor that makes the Big Daddies.
He's Asian. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. They don't treat him worse. I want to say that, right? Or
no,
I
mean the society doesn't.
We don't know enough to address this.
Yeah, I can't. It's in the second game. It's in the second game. I don't know if it's in the first game.
Don't they make commentary about the artist's Judaism?
Maybe.
Because he's Jewish, right?
There's
Cohen,
anti-Semitism, that's true.
Oh gosh, what was his name?
Cohen?
Sander Cohen. Yeah, Sander Cohen. Man, that's my favorite section of the game.
It's fucking awesome.
That fucking maniac.
Yeah, he's really good.
It's so great.
Just wearing mime makeup all the time.
But it makes sense if, I mean...
I'm just bringing this up to like,
if
is
one
this
game,
true?
I mean, if you're going to invoke Ayn Rand, I think it makes sense that if in one major game you're going to talk about systemic racism and another one you're going to talk about wealth disparity... I'd buy that it splits up that way.
Legit.
That makes
There's
sense
overlap,
that the same
yeah.
person would talk about both. Those are the two big driving oppressive factors in our world.
We should move on.
Yeah. So
My fault. We'll
close out this episode with a little thing we call, what are we calling it?
Keep or delete.
Keep or delete. Okay.
Everyone keeps saying save, but no, I like
save or delete.
Keep or delete rolls off my tongue.
Keep or delete
better.
Has the assonance of the long E sound that you like.
Love it.
Hey guys, I'm home.
Everyone knows that it's Dad's job to be a bit of a joker.
Sorry I'm late, everyone. There was an accident at the factory. Monty fell into the upholstery machine. Don't worry, though. He's fully recovered.
Good one, Dad.
Did you get the pizza for dinner?
So he likes to keep everyone happy with some dad jokes.
Yep, right here. I had a coupon, and it saved me a lot of dough.
Well, the truth is, Dad is just a fun guy.
Hey, I'm not a mushroom.
Please stop. Where does he get these stupid jokes from?
He listens to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast.
Oh, great. More dad jokes for me.
We've delivered over 15,000 jokes to over 3 million listeners, and man, the postage fees are killing us. Listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robey,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
Thank you for taking the light, and you're going to shine it all over the world, and it makes me really happy.
I never imagined that I would get the chance to carry this honor and help be a part of this legacy.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hello. From Wonder Media Network, I'm Jenny Kaplan, host of Womanica, a daily podcast that introduces you to the fascinating lives of women history has forgotten. This month, we're bringing you the stories of disappearing acts. There's the 17th century fraudster who convinced men she was a German princess. The 1950s folk singer who literally drove off into the sunset and was never heard from again. The First Nations activist whose kidnapping and murder ignited decades of discourse about Indigenous women's disappearances. And the young daughter of a Russian czar whose legendary escape led to even more intrigue and speculation. These stories make us consider what it means to disappear and why a woman might even want to make herself scarce. Listen to Womanica on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Which is basically, I mean, you'll know the drill. It's yeah. Like if there were, say, a golden record.
Right, sure.
Or let's say extraterrestrial beings were going to view this movie. I mean, game, play this game.
Sure.
Yeah. Do you think this is a great avatar and representative of its genre? Or, yeah.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Does God...
Start with Tom.
Does God approve of this game?
100%.
You are God.
Yeah.
Yes. You keep it? Tom keeps it?
Yeah. Hmm. I think for what it does, I mean, yeah, it's average for a shooter, but I think it's using the medium for what it does, the kinds of things that it does with its narrative, the things that it addresses, I think, yeah, absolutely, you keep this game.
If you can only keep one Bioshock, is it infinite? I knew that'd be harder.
Oh, man.
Well, we should all answer before we answer that question.
You think we should all answer both? Okay.
Yeah. But let him answer that question.
Let's see. Okay.
You want me to answer that question?
Yeah.
That's legitimately very hard.
This is the longest pause we've had on any episode of this.
Yeah, that's a very hard question.
I think it, because it strikes at this tension we've uncovered. One is clearly more innovative in the gameplay sector, and one has a better story. Which is more important to you? Or do you think, see, the look on Adam's face says he thinks Bioshock 1 has a better story as well.
Oh, man.
I'm going to let Tom answer first.
Gosh, that is real hard. Because they're both still relevant.
Right. Mm-hmm. Well, like, the aliens are watching, so
right. You're saying it's an important decision. The two main issues with our society is economic disparity and racism.
Yeah,
and this is what these games are about.
Keep or delete wouldn't have any tension if we didn't force it down to.
It wouldn't be a great gimmick from a spectacular podcast.
Exactly.
If you didn't have to make
the
a choice.
The hard drive has to be of limited size. Yeah. I will delete Bioshock Infinite in the interest of keeping Bioshock 1.
If you can only keep one,
yeah.
But what if you don't have to?
Then I'd keep both. Yeah, yeah, I'd keep both.
Because sometimes you can.
Okay.
Like I would say, like there's going to be five Super Marios on this.
The segment's rules are not fully fleshed out. We discover them as we go.
Because we didn't say, like, is it 200 gigabytes or whatever.
That's what I realized.
But, like, if you think of it as, like, a top 200 games of all time or something like that,
probably,
are both these games on there?
I think both of those games are in a top 200 list.
Almost certainly.
Yeah.
Actually, for me, this is so weird to say because it's the reverse of what you'd think from what I just said.
Right.
If you think of it that way, just top 200 list, Infinite makes it for me and one does not.
That's bananas.
Because my list is entirely story driven. Like what floats up the list is about what stories engage me.
That's really strange to me. I can't understand that. I will say my answer is exactly yours. I would keep this game in a list of 200 of all time. I would, if I have to keep a Bioshock, it's definitely one. I think one is better and more innovative and interesting, and we should talk about that one on a podcast.
System Shock, Bioshock is great, though. Episode, yeah. You should play System Shock.
Yeah.
It's dope.
I would also say that, again, I don't want to diminish the potent things this game says, but, like, it does dilute them as time goes on.
It is a game.
And it doesn't really come out and swing that hard as it wanted to swing for the context that it brought up.
No, it's more
and
like...
And it should have.
Know the phrase save the cat, like in the early scenes of your movie, have the hero do something
right.
Objectively good, like save a kitten. Right. So everyone loves them. I feel like it was used more as a reverse save the cat. Like,
agreed.
Get in here, show them being blatantly racist and violent. We've established they're the villains. Now you can kill 1,000 of them.
We've described this game as being a racial commentary. And in truth, it's less a racial commentary than it is about sort of religious oppression. You know, like, it's more about that
than
it is
more
about
than that,
racism.
If you divided it up into time spent playing, more than either of those, it's a game. So it's just adventure.
Sure, sure.
Like the falling out of the blimp and landing on the beach. That's not commentary on anything.
Walking up the beach looking for coins, listening to an old like accordion version of Girls Just Want to Have Fun.
They're just trying to think what would be cool and fun to have, and it was. Which a game should do. Yeah.
I also feel like I didn't give this game enough credit for the rail riding system in terms of gameplay, because that was very different than BioShock 1, and it was fun.
And I will when the handyman entered the field, it gave me something of the feeling of, oh shit, a big daddy's entering the field. They do feel monumental.
They're okay.
Yeah.
They're okay.
They're not as good as
Patriots.
They're not as cool as big daddies, for sure.
I just didn't care about those guys because their story was a little...
They're basically just the late stage enemy with more armor,
I just think, and I hate being this guy, but like in the original BioShock, you're killing dope fiends. Like, and people who are really distorted and fucked up, and it feels fucked up when you do it, and it's bloody and mean. This is just a bunch of cops. You're just killing. It's like a GTA version of BioShock.
And but that's like dumb and stuff.
Or clans.
Yeah, they're all racist. But they're all you. Racist. So is your guy.
When you're at the Civil War Museum, you're basically just killing clans.
Right, like, exactly.
It's just a cadre of racist assholes.
I mean, that's a satisfying thing, but your guy's also a racist. Let's not forget that.
I'm pretty sure he is. But really? Because I like to... I don't understand.
He's got some old views. He says them as he goes along.
No, but I am him, and by playing that bit...
Then you're not racist.
I chose to throw the baseball at the promoter.
Is that really the only time that Booker's opinions on that?
I decided that in my mind I did that because I think racism's despicable, so isn't in my version of this game... Doesn't Booker agree with me? I am him.
I don't know. Because he... That's... I mean, again, that's another thing that makes this game unique. He has a point of view. It doesn't change.
What does he say that's... When you say old... I don't remember any game dialogue from Booker that is racist.
I don't remember it offhand either, but he says a lot of things that surprised me.
Okay.
I'm just saying, he's a defined character. We don't change his story that much.
I know, and he's like cynical and burned out, but I don't remember him being racist, but maybe I didn't notice.
Might not have.
All right.
They probably were pretty careful about that.
Do we have an answer from Tom? On which BioShock to keep?
If I can only keep one?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably one.
Mm-hmm.
That's correct.
That brings
the episode to a successful conclusion. We're glad you made it, Tom. Thanks for coming
Thanks for being here, Tom.
Yeah. Sorry I was late.
We'll see you guys next. No, you didn't need to tell them.
I want them to know.
All right.
Bring out the beating sticks.
Peaked a little bit, but I'll get it in editing.
Oh, sorry.
Work complete.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Hi, this is Kurtwood Smith. You remember me from such TV comedies as That 70s Show and That 90s Show on Netflix. I'll never forget the words that my grandfather said just before he kicked the bucket. He said, "Watch how far I can kick this bucket." People ask me where I get my dad jokes from. I tell them to listen to the Daily Dad Jokes podcast. Listen to Daily Dad Jokes every day on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.